Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. The war for the free world, of course, is a catch-all phrase that describes the myriad challenges that this country is exposed to from enemies, foreign and domestic. I myself took an oath to try to defend our Constitution against both, as did our guest for this important hour-long conversation. He is Bill Marshall. He has served both in government, in the intelligence community, and in the private sector, doing investigations that have contributed, I'm quite confident, materially to the security of this country against those enemies, both foreign and domestic. These days, he is performing an incalculable service to our country as a senior investigator at Judicial Watch. There are few organizations who have done more to help us understand what's going on inside our government, through government agencies, to American citizens at their hands, and so much more. And it is, as a result, extremely timely that we are having this conversation with Bill. We've just learned, as we speak, that the memo that has been prepared by Devin Nunes's staff of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence has been released. Unfortunately, neither Bill nor I have, at this moment, had an opportunity to take aboard what it says. So we'll be speculating a little bit, but at least by the time this program airs, the American people will have had an opportunity to begin taking aboard what we are told is some very troubling information about some of those government agencies, specifically the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, and the Department of Justice. So Bill Marshall, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I couldn't be more pleased that we have the time with you to drill down on some of these topics in some detail. Thank you for giving so generously of your time, and welcome back.
Thank you very much, Frank. I'm glad to be back.
Let us begin with this memo. To the best of your ability, and again, based only at this point on these reports that we've been getting of it, what do you think it says, and why is what it says likely to be so important to our polity, our republic, and perhaps our security?
Right. Well, I think the reaction by the other side is more telling than just about anything else in terms of the import of the contents of that memo. You know, you don't like to get too far ahead of your skis and trying to predict what an unreleased memo might say. But we've had some really terrific patriots like Trey Gowdy and Matthew Gaetz and others, congressmen both, as you know, sort of talking around the memo without revealing its contents in violation of, their oaths, all right? So they're, Trey Gowdy, being the experienced prosecutor that he is, poses hypothetical questions about what we would like to know from the memo. And of course, he's seen it. He knows what's in it. So they've laid out a pretty good, pretty clear outline of what this thing contains. And obviously, it is, I don't know if damning is the word to use yet, the conduct of the FBI and DOJ, but one can surmise that it's not going to be good for them.
Well, as you say, if you look at the screeching that's coming from those quarters, as well as, of course, the Democrats on the committee and Nancy Pelosi and others, it does suggest that this is going to make their lives very difficult as institutions or as partisans in this fight. So with that as kind of the backdrop, Bill Marshall, you have been working at Judicial Watch trying to extract information about these topics. Specifically, Bill, as we understand it, the memo will shed light on what the FBI used to begin the process of surveillance of American citizens associated with the Trump campaign that raises serious questions about possible even criminal wrongdoing. Put these dots together as best you can for us, again, based on the reporting rather than actually having a chance to read the document to this point.
Right, right. I think I laid out, I think we discussed in our last conversation in a column I wrote, The FBI is Sinking was the title. It was from American Thinker maybe a week or two ago. What I basically assess to be the whole picture, as it's taking shape regarding the Trump dossier and the abuse of FISA and everything else, right? So it's essentially, and what it comes down to in a nutshell, and this may sound like histrionics or something, you know, by somebody on the right wing, you know, probably labeled a conspiracy theorist or something, but it's obviously what it's shaping up to be, and I think everyone else is kind of coming along to the same conclusion, is that you had, in effect, a conspiracy to take down a major party's presidential candidate using the authorities and the technological resources of the U.S. government, a conspiracy among top officials and DOJ and FBI, the opposition campaign, and outside smear merchants, if you will, like Fusion GPS.
And again, Fusion GPS was an opposition research sort of private investigative arm. We're doing business at that point, at least as I say, as an arm of the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's campaign, it turns out, right?
Right, right, and it's sort of political junkies like us. It's a fascinating and yet deeply, deeply troubling scenario which is unfolding here. I mean, this goes to the heart of our democracy, the heart of our republic. To see the abuse of the powers and technical resources of the government by one party in power against a party that is challenging it for power. It doesn't get any more serious than that. One of my friends took me to task a little bit for using the word frightening in my last interview with you, saying that this whole thing is frightening. I don't know a better impact word to try to convey what I view as the seriousness of this situation. I mean, I agree that it sort of connotes weakness, using the word frightening, if the situation is frightening. But more importantly, it should, if people prefer, it should be deeply concerning, deeply troubling, to use more sort of Washington wonk speak, to the American polity that in general that this could happen in this country.
This is banana republic country, I think, is what we're talking about. The instruments of the state being used to try to essentially take down an opposition political candidate and party. And Bill, the thing that I think you really hammered in your excellent piece about the FBI at the American Thinker is, let's be clear, as far as we can tell, this wasn't the Bureau as a whole. This was key members of the senior ranks of that agency that were off the reservation, if you will. But it has called into disrepute, I'm afraid, unless and until we get this kind of information from the memo, and unless and until, steps are taken to clean house of such individuals, it will continue, I'm afraid, to reflect badly on the organization. Is that fair in your judgment? And if so, what do we make of Christopher Wray's role at the moment in threatening, it sounds like, resignation, or at least raising hell about this memo's release?
Well, that's absolutely right, Frank. And I want to I did a segment recently for Inside Judicial Watch, our in-house program here at Judicial Watch, where I discuss my views on the Fusion GPS role and this whole scenario. And I make the point, as have Tom Fitton and Chris Farrell and many other great commentators on this subject, that we're not impugning the entire rank and file of the FBI. I've got relatives in the FBI. I have friends there. I used to work with them when I was in the DEA. I have a lot of respect for them, for the the street agent level guys.
The dumpster divers is the way they've sometimes been called. The people doing the hard work of law enforcement at the federal level. Hey, hold the thought. We've got to pause for just a second, Bill Marshall. We'll be right back with much more with one of the best investigators now working at Judicial Watch and I think in the country right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're talking with Bill Marshall, senior investigator at Judicial Watch. If you are unfamiliar with Judicial Watch, you are not paying attention. I encourage you to do so. I believe the website is judicialwatch.org. You can also find his writings at American Thinker, hoping that we will have him frequently with us. We've enjoyed talking with him twice now in as many weeks. But Bill, you were talking about an important distinction that you have made at Judicial Watch, and I think that all of us not only should make, but certainly can make, despite the cavilling that everybody in the Bureau and everybody in the Department of Justice is somehow being defamed by the evidence that Congressman Nunez and his colleagues are trying to bring to light. So complete that thought, if you would.
Right. I mean, I love to see, you know, the people on the left standing up for law enforcement. You know, it's about time, you know, after how many years of, you know, the cops are evil and all this nonsense, right? It's nice to hear them speaking up for the hard work and the integrity of law enforcement.
And especially, and we'll talk more about this in a minute, they were pretty quick to blame the FBI, as I recall, when they thought that it was unfairly treating Hillary Clinton.
Right. Then suddenly they do the 180, right, when suddenly it's, you know, their ox is being gored in their view. And it's just so it's this elite leadership, right, the politically motivated top ranks. You know, we're talking the Andrew McCabe's, the James Comey's, maybe the Jim Urbicki's, who was recently, up until recently, chief of staff at the FBI. I believe he's been removed. You know, at DOJ, of course, you have guys like Bruce Orr, right?
So we'll see. And we can't say for sure at this point, folks, though you may have already ascertained this, whether these people are all named, implicated, exposed in this memo. But at the moment, it certainly sounds as though those people have been running rogue operations at the expense of not only the civil liberties of some of their targets, but perhaps, you know, the reputations and the authority of the organizations for which they work. Bill, when you look at how far these guys seem to have gone to engage in this Banana Republic effort to, first of all, defeat Donald Trump as a presidential candidate, and then, as worrying to me, is what they did to try to destroy his presidency. How does the Mueller special counsel investigation tie into all of this, or at least how is it likely to be affected by these revelations, if you can speculate?
Right. Well, I mean, again, we're all speculating, but, you know, if they launched an investigation, right, of any individual based, first of all, potentially on a fraud on the court, which would be this Christopher Steele dossier, which I think is patently ridiculous and so on so many levels. But if they dressed that thing up and presented it to the FISA court as, you know, real intelligence, and then use that as a basis to obtain a FISA warrant on Carter Page or anybody else, any other American citizen, I think would be an outrage. Even if it was used in part, you know, and I think, frankly, that would taint Michael Flynn's conviction. I suspect that may have something to do with the recusal of Judge Contreras from his case. You know, and I believe there's been a suspension on his sentencing sentencing date. So you got to be wondering, well, what's going on with that? I mean, it's the old fruit of the poison tree argument. If you've used something that is fundamentally dishonest to as the basis for an investigation, you've pretty much poisoned any resulting convictions, prosecutions resulting from that investigation. So I think it potentially this memo has potential to undermine the Mueller team, and that is the great fear, I believe, among the left and the deep state. And let's be clear what this is. This is an unholy alliance here between the left and the deep state, which is a phrase which I love in that it captures so well the Leviathan of the state, and it's primarily these leftist technocrats who are so embedded in our lives and our government. I wonder if this memo, the revelation of this memo, is not leading toward almost a tipping point between the deep state / left in the country and the rest of America, the normal Americans who are just trying to live their lives. Now, I'm not trying to suggest any, God forbid, civil war or anything like that. I don't foresee that. But I do think that it could lead to just an increasingly, if it's possible, partisan, polarized society where, you just have this divide that's so destructive to our society, the fabric of our society in so many ways. I mean, I have so many friends that I frankly don't talk to anymore, won't talk to me because of our politics have become so sort of poisonous.
Yeah. You know, Bill, let me just drill down on this for a minute, because A, I want to come back to the point we made earlier. When we talk about the deep state, there probably is in some people's mind an image that it's the whole government that is a deep state. And what you're really saying, as you have, said in the context specifically of the FBI and DOJ and this memo, is actually not. Most of the people in the government are doing their jobs in a nonpartisan, a civil service role, as it is supposed to be performed under the law. I mean, partisanship in the civil service is a problem, Hatch Act and all that. But a colleague of ours has introduced an interesting thought, and I'd just like to explore it a little bit with you, that in addition to making clear that we're talking about bad actors who have burrowed into the government and are using its powers in inappropriate, if not actually illegal, ways, the question that has occurred is there something more there, that it's not just deep state, but to use the sort of Marxist term, it's the counter state. It's people who are actually working against the government of the United States from within it. And that this is sort of exemplary of other problems that we've seen. Well, I happen to think manifested in a particularly ugly fashion by the vast majority of Democrats, if not virtually all of them, on the House floor in the course of the State of the Union address. I mean, even when the president was talking about core American values and, symbols and priorities, these people were expressing through their body language and through their positions and so on, their deep hostility to all of those. So is that an unfair line to draw here?
No, not at all. I mean, I agree that to watch the State of the Union and just watch the Democrats as a block sit on their hands and scowl when President Trump was, quite justifiably sort of touting the lowest black unemployment rate in recorded history in America, great accomplishments like that. You have to wonder, well, are these people Americans? I mean, do they believe in the things that you and I grew up believing? And I really wonder. I've spent my life trying to understand how, the other side, if you will, thinks, because I've never understood how they can view the world through a prism in which America is fundamentally the fault, at fault for all the world's ills.
and an evil contributor to it. Let me just ask you to pause, Bill. We've got a break for one more moment. We will be right back with more of this fascinating conversation about the memo, about the people who are central characters in it, and the larger problem of which they may simply be exemplars. That and much more with Bill right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back for this extended conversation's third segment with Bill Marshall. He is a man who has served his country in government, doing investigations for the intelligence community and others there. He is now, I'm very pleased to say, doing splendid work as a senior investigator at Judicial Watch. And I honestly cannot say enough about how much I admire Tom Fitton and Chris Farrell and your whole team there at Judicial Watch, Bill. It's really such a model of what really public-spirited non-governmental organizations can do. Most don't, quite frankly, but yours certainly does. So we were talking, and this is such an important issue, even with this hour, we won't do justice to it, but I think to begin getting people thinking about what have we wrought here in terms of cultivating and legitimating and empowering people who actually are deeply hostile to our country and what it stands for, what it exemplifies, which is truly an exceptional nation. And we could go in any number of directions about this. So I think you were starting with sort of government, and maybe that's the place we should pick up with.
I think that, we were discussing how the Democrats during the State of the Union were so negative, and they could not seem to bring themselves to applaud any of the wonderful values that President Trump expressed, traditional American values. And I think that this has been a project on the left, in the making for probably 100 years. I mean, you would know better than I, actually. I think you've spent much more time studying sort of the history of progressivism in the United States. And there's this fundamental, I think, this bedrock foundational view that the United States is to blame for all the world's ills. I mean, if you want to condense it, the divergence, if you will, between the dichotomy between the left and the right in this country, one way would be, I think, to do that is simply to look at how each views the United States. We on the right view the United States as a force for good. Those on the left view the United States as a force for evil. They may say it's overly simplistic, and they may parse it, saying, "Oh, well, the United States would be a force for good if it did this, this, and that." So we see this long march through the institutions, right through the American education system.
This is the term the cultural Marxists, as I understand it, have coined for essentially penetrating and subverting these institutions. Is that right?
Right. We just saw yesterday, I'm sure you saw heard the clip of the college professor who went on a tear about how horrible the military is, right? He tells his students in the classroom that only losers, or whatever his term is, go into the military, that they're not very bright, that's which is an absolute outrage, especially, I mean, but putting aside the insulting nature of a rant like that, you look at the data and, 90%+ of enlisted guys and girls in the military have high school diplomas, which is higher than the 59% of the general population. And of the officer corps, 90%+ have bachelor's degrees or higher, as opposed to a much smaller fraction of the adult population in this country. So, it's just patently false, empirically speaking.
But it's symptomatic of a brainwashing of people in this country not to value our institutions. The one that is probably the most admired in the country still, despite all it's been through, is the military.
Exactly. And it's one thing after another. It's the churches, that those are maligned. The Boy Scouts. I mean, these sort of bedrock institutions that make our country what it is are constantly demeaned by the left. And it's sort of this project of chaos or destruction.
In the service of supplanting our institutions, or at least their values, their legal obligations and practices and so on, with something of a very different character, that is to say, something that is in the service of sort of this totalitarian ideology of the left, or or for that matter, I'm afraid, increasingly, of the Islamist stripe, the Sharia supremacist stripe. And what I find particularly interesting, Bill, and I don't know how much you've delved into this in quite this way. I know at Judicial Watch you've done some extraordinarily important work examining, for example, the emails and the conduct of Huma Abedin, a woman who we are relentlessly told by the fact checkers at the Washington Post and their Democrats, and even John McCain, is purer than the driven snow, and yet there's no question that she has family ties as well as personal ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. And that is an organization that is all about Sharia supremacism, as you know. So to the extent that we have people like Huma Abedin serving in, at least in the past now, high levels of the United States government and exercising influence there, I'm afraid, though the end state these folks have in mind may be different, the left and the Sharia supremacists, the red and the green axes elements, they nonetheless seem to share this common antipathy towards our country and a desire to take it down, do they not?
Absolutely. And of course, as we both know, our colleague Matthew Vadim has just written a book and published by your organization, in fact, I believe, The Red-Green Axis. And I raised, you may recall, at a panel discussion recently with Matt Vadim and some other folks, that the U.S. State Department continues to fund organizations run by, sponsored by George Soros throughout the world that seek to unite young radical leftist folks in various countries, anti-American people, with indigenous Muslim populations in those countries. And this has been going on, for example, in, one I cite frequently, because I've, worked on a number of investigations into this issue, is Macedonia, where they were Soros' 60-plus organizations, NGOs, that are being funded in part or in whole by the State Department Civil Society Project, are uniting the left and the Muslims to, in this sort of unholy alliance to, in the case of Macedonia, overthrow the pro-American conservative government there. And we're seeing that these same kinds of organizations being paid.
Are taxpayer funds going to help them? Among these cases, Bill, and I don't know if this is one of the ones you're thinking of, but just, I believe, in the past week or so, there was a grant that the State Department was making to not only a Soros operation, the Open Society Institute, I believe, but also the Southern Poverty Law Center, one of the most discredited political warfare instruments in our country, to teach young people from Britain about how splendidly we're doing in countering violent extremism, which is a complete brotherhood operation, as I understand it. So, I mean, these kinds of problems are not simply something that has happened in the past under the Obama administration, though God knows it did, but it seems to be continuing amazingly under the Trump administration.
Right. I made the observation recently to a colleague that Trump may control the levers of power, but if you move those levers and nothing happens, what's he really controlling? And I think that's unfortunately the situation we're in with the deep state and these massive bloated bureaucracy that's sort of running on autopilot. And you have all these programs like the Civil Society Project of the State Department, and I'm sure there are countless others throughout the government that are funding these leftist initiatives, these agenda items. And to try to get down and change that system takes probably years, and it takes cooperation from the people that are populating these organizations. And there's no power on earth like the power of inertia, So to try to change these things, it's got to be a Herculean task for any incoming conservative.
Well, Bill, we have to pause for one more break, but I did want to say that you've just touched on one of the great problems, I believe, of the Trump administration. Steve Bannon, of course, famously said on 60 Minutes that the original sin of the Trump presidency was deciding on the second day after the election to turn over the keys of personnel to the Republican establishment under Rice Priebus. And I think you can talk about the levers of power and all that, and you can talk about the deep state for that matter. But in addition, if you've made bad personnel judgments, I think of H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, as a case in point, Bill. You're levers are not necessarily connected to anything, and that deep state is going to be empowered by those personnel that you nominally have working for you to work very much against you. It was, I'm afraid, to a considerable degree, a story that afflicted the president in his first term. I hope he's going to clean house on this score as well after this memo's release. We'll be right back with much, much more with Bill Marshall of the outstanding organization Judicial Watch right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back for the final installment of a most exhilarating and deeply disturbing conversation with Bill Marshall of Judicial Watch. He is one of their senior investigators. He is incredibly skilled in getting the facts out, despite the extraordinary lengths that the government, the deep state most especially, has gone to try to thwart not only Judicial Watch's investigations, but even congressional oversight. Indeed, the record, I think, is pretty clear. You've done a heck of a lot better, Bill, at Judicial Watch with your FOIA requests, the Freedom of Information Act requests that have been finally enforced by courts, than have all of the congressional committees and subcommittees with their subpoena power and oversight responsibilities and the like. So my hat's off again to you for all of that. But one of the things I'd like to ask you just to expand upon a little bit is one of those cases in point. The kind of painstaking, tenacious pursuit that you all have engaged in at Judicial Watch of the truth about Hillary Clinton's malfeasant conduct with respect to her emails, and what light you have seen shed in the course of your investigations thereof about people like Homa Abedin, her right-hand gal, and her conduct.
Right. Well, I'll tell you. In getting ready for our talk today, I went and reviewed the 20 press releases that we prepared at Judicial Watch, based on the 20,000 or whatever it was pages of emails that I got from the State Department, the Homa Abedin emails. What really struck me in looking back over the last 3 years was almost the providential timing and sort of substance of the stream of email traffic that we got. Providential in the sense that we never know when we file a FOIA request how long it's going to take to get the records back or what they're going to contain, right? So I filed that request in March of 2015. We then filed a lawsuit on my request in May of 2015, and then we got our first production records in September of 2015. And it was a small trickle, and there was some mildly interesting stuff in the first initial productions. Okay, we began to see a little bit of strange sort of poor information security, communication security, that sort of thing. You know, then we began to see a little bit of the pay-for-play kind of stuff going on. And then as 2016, as the election cycle started getting really intense, we started getting a flood of devastating, really devastating revelations coming out of all this email traffic from Homa Abedin, where you see massive pay-for-play corruption involving, you know, the Clinton Foundation and Doug Band, who was a top official over there, you know, contacting Homa and directing her as early as 3 months into the Obama administration, that she had to make somebody happy, some, you know, big Clinton donor, some, you know, get a visa for some Saudi because he's a donor. As the election cycle kind of progressed, we began to see all this confidential traffic going back and forth, you know, this classified information that, I mean, you and I both held top secret clearances in the government, as did millions of other Americans. And we know that if we did a 1% of what Homa and Hillary did with respect to the handling of national security information, that we'd be in Leavenworth. We know that.
And again, that goes back to what we were saying earlier about all those FBI agents and Justice Department employees who had to have been horrified by what was going on. And I think far from impugning them, we are now in a position to say thank you for your service despite what was being done in your agencies, the State Department as well, needless to say.
Now, they say the morale was so high at the FBI. I don't believe that. I can't imagine that all those loyal, patriotic men and women who are serving in the FBI and the intelligence community generally were okay with the treatment that James Comey gave to, you know, and Loretta Lynch and all gave to Hillary Clinton, knowing full well that she was guilty of sin.
So that makes him a dirty cop, in other words.
I think so. I mean, he did a great job of affecting this sort of Boy Scout persona or aura. But in reality, I think that would be a fair characterization. So as the arc of the election continues toward a crescendo, we see a larger and larger volume of materials being turned over to us by the State Department that were increasingly really egregious, you know, in terms of the behavior, you know, evidenced by Hillary and Huma, and the corruption, you know, in terms of the Clinton Foundation. It was essentially a melding of the State Department with the Clinton Foundation to turn it into a money-making operation.
And Bill, you say that they were turning this over, but is it correct to say that by and large, you were extracting it from them with court orders, right?
Yeah, yes. And I don't mean to imply that there were some kind of, you know, pro-Judicial Watch people at the State Department and their FOIA department or anything like that. On the contrary, we had to litigate. You know, we had to battle in the courts to get this stuff. It just turned out that the timing was incredibly fortuitous in some ways in terms of the amount of material we got, the substance in the materials that we got, to just enable us to churn out press release after press release that kind of ratcheted up the damage that it was doing. Not so much damage. It wasn't that we were trying to damage her per se or her campaign. We were just revealing the truth.
And what is just the takeaway from all of this in terms of, you, as you said, clearly there was criminal activity that was going on. And was there as well a damage, as best you can tell, Bill Marshall of Judicial Watch, was there damage to the national security as well?
Oh, I have no doubt. I mean, I have no doubt that our adversaries were reading all of, you know, Secretary Clinton's, you know, traffic, and who knows who else may have been compromised through their poor, you know, ComSec, their, you know, communication security.
And from what you've been able to say about the, forgive me for interrupting, but I just want to make sure I get this calibrated. From what you've been able to see through your own work and that of others, of the classified documents that were on these insecure servers or were being communicated on insecure devices, including, by the way, in some of these hostile countries, which, as I understand it, is a guaranteed collection opportunity for enemy intelligence. Were there national security secrets and perhaps capabilities, sources and methods, agents even, who may well have been compromised in the course of this?
I have no doubt about that. I mean, speaking of course, I can't point to a, you know, particular smoking gun. I mean, obviously the materials that we got were themselves redacted, right? So any emails, you know, that may have contained national security information, when they were turned over to us, that our adversaries may have been able to read, by the time we got them, the State Department or the CIA or whomever had redacted those portions that were potentially compromising. But I have no doubt. And in fact, I believe that there's a high degree of certainty that at least one individual died as a result. I believe it was an Iranian scientist, you may recall, as a result of Hillary's loose communications.
That's just absolutely outrageous. I'm afraid at this point it can't be called surprising, but it is outrageous. And I pray, and if my prayer is going to be answered, it will be in no small measure thanks to your work, Bill Marshall, and that of your colleagues at Judicial Watch, that there will be accountability for Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin and the rest of these characters who have, in fact, engaged in such profound misconduct, and that there will not be tolerated any longer a double standard for them and their cohort of self-dealing, pay-to-play partisans. Bill, we have to wrap it at that, though. It's so good to have this chance to talk with you. I hope we'll do much more of it in 2018. I thank you for your time today, and again, commend to you all. JudicialWatch.org is a source of superb information, and you'll hear more about it from here, that's for sure. I hope all of you will come back to us again Monday to learn more on these topics, about the memo, and much, much more. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.